Good evening, everybody. Welcome back to the Bundesliga show. Hope everyone is doing well and ready to tune in for some great Bundesliga chat. I'm joined, as ever, by Mark and Peter. How are we doing tonight, gents?
Not bad at all in rainy Nuremberg. Looking forward to the show and getting stuck into the big topics this week.
I concur. What an absolutely fantastic weekend of football. And Mark and I had a great watch along last night. Now it's time to dive into the world's best footballing beat. We got a lot to talk about.
We do have a lot to talk about. Before we get stuck into it, just a bit of an outline for everyone that's tuning in right now. By all means, please do get your comments in because it was a really big weekend. We're going to focus on the top spiel, the game between Leverkusen and Bayern Munich to start with. I'm going to get really stuck into that because there's obviously lots to talk about. We'll then move on to the fan protests and try and talk our way through that a little bit because, it's really not going away. And it's something that we haven't really talked about too much on the show. So we wanted to give it its fair credit and time. We'll talk about the removal of Jan Seward from Mainz today. Obviously, pretty hot topic and fresh out off the press. So we'll talk about that, where the minds go next. And then if we still have time, we'll try and cover the rest of the action from the weekend because there was loads of great games as well. So lots to get through. So before we do get cracking, if you can leave a thumbs up on the show, that would be fantastic. Already some comments in there, so we'll try and get through those. Of course, questions, like I say, comments on Bayern, comments on Leverkusen. If you're fans of both, let's have it all, let's have it out. And of course, remember to subscribe to the channel. Right then, boys, let's get straight into it. What an interesting game we had on Saturday evening. Everyone was talking about it prior to the game and everyone's talking about it ever since. And it lived up to the billing. From a Leverkusen point of view, at the very least, obviously 3-0 to the home side. They stay unbeaten and they just look like they're on a trajectory to an absolute madness of the season, really. So maybe before we get stuck into the game, before we even got into the game, there were headlines being created by team lineups and it was causing a stir. Cross social media, all us three were having a little chat. I think me and Mark had an exchange saying, "Well, that's an interesting lineup from Leverkusen." Is Xabi? People were saying it's Bayern paid off Xabi and all sorts. But it ended up being that Xabi knows best, and his team lineup prevailed. So, first and foremost, did either of you two see that Leverkusen lineup coming? I presume not. Peter, I'll throw it to you first. What did you think when you saw that lineup?
I actually was not surprised. There were some slight hints that Xabi dropped in his Friday presser that he might be willing to give Amin Idli a start over both of his slumping strikers. Well, Iglesias hasn't gotten himself established just yet, but Schick has been in a slump of form. And he was hinting that he might give Adli the start based on how strong Adli was at the Africa Cup of Nations and how crucial he was in that DFB Pokal tie. So I was not surprised to see Adli start. The competition was supposed to be between Adli and Jonas Hofmann. So it was interesting to see that Nathan Teller, of course, also started, and Frimpong, Hofmann, and the two strikers all began the game on the bench. Not to mention Josip Stanisic, who rubbed some serious salt in Bayern wounds as well. Important thing to say about this is that the Bundesrepublik is absolutely abuzz with this tactical masterclass, this tactical coup that Xabi Alonso pulled on Thomas Tuchel. I didn't get a definitive answer from you guys on Kiosk this week, but the headlines are that Xabi made Tuchel look like a fool, and that Leverkusen have absolutely disgraced FC Bayern München with this performance. So nobody is holding up. I had to dig very deep into the papers to find something that wasn't just Bayern bashing. At any rate, what about you, Mark? What did you think about those lineups?
Yeah, I mean, I think me and Rory were texting just before the kickoff, weren't we? I mean, the one that really shocked me was Stanisic, really, because, I mean, obviously he hadn't been particularly high. He hadn't got, like, really great reviews from the Leverkusen fans. Obviously, Xabi was kind of seemed to not really rate him for a long period from what I could gather. I mean, I follow a few Bayer Leverkusen forums online as well, and quite a lot of people were saying that, you know, maybe he would get shipped off back to Bayern in January, and then all of a sudden he starts this crucial game. So I think there's absolutely no denying the fact that there was a lot of surprise to see him start. I mean, I would imagine it was because he provides a little bit more defensive security than Frimpong as well on that kind of right wing-back position. But yeah, I mean, I think it was one of them. I think we mentioned it, Rory. I think it's one of them where it looks great until it doesn't work. Do you know what I mean? Because if it didn't work, then all of a sudden you would have got some criticism for Xabi. I would imagine that as well. But I mean, as it happened, it worked a treat. And oh boy, did it work a treat. Because obviously Stanisic got the opening goal. Then Frimpong came on and played an absolute blinder for the last 30 minutes or so as well. Mm-hmm. And I mean, basically it was just an absolute walk in the park for Leverkusen. It was a superb performance and a full 90-minute performance. And what can you say about Bayer Leverkusen, really? I mean, if anyone had doubts about Bayer nor fear before this game, they don't have them anymore. Let's just say that much.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, going into the game itself, the 90 minutes, it's very rare that, you know, when in the UK, at least, obviously the highlights from the, you know, the Bundesliga or from Sky Sports, literally the one thing that they could pick out from a Bayern perspective, I think, was Mazraoui's shot in the first half. And that was speculative, to say the least. It was just a complete performance from Leverkusen. They were so controlled. They just, every single player knew their purpose in that team and that performance. It was a confident outing. You know, first half as well. Do we think 1-0 reflected the game? Mark, I'll come to you first on this one. Would Leverkusen have gone into halftime feeling that, not that they'd missed their chance, but the fact that, well, maybe we haven't killed off Bayern here and maybe we should have at least had a second goal to have gone into halftime? I think obviously there was a chance for, was it Adli late on in the first half where he goes through on goal and Upamecano does really well to make that recovery run on him as well. So that obviously there's some great opportunities for them, but obviously it remained 1-0 until early in the second half. So, you know, would Leverkusen have felt still a little bit nervous, but at least in control at least?
Not much, really, I don't think. I think 1-0 was fair at half-time. I think the XG was about 1.2 for Leverkusen and about 0.05 for Bayern or something in that first half. But yeah, basically, I think 1-0 was fair, but it was very, very convincing. And one of the things I loved about this performance is that they just didn't give Bayern Munich a sniff at all. The pressing was superb. You know, I mean, Andrich, if anyone doubted him before these last two games, he's been the star, one of the stars of these last two games, really. I mean, his assist was beautiful on the first goal. You know, his pressing, the quality he brings to that team has just been superb. I mean, myself and Peter watched the game against Stuttgart, and he was brilliant in that game too. And I mean, he went one further in this one for me, and he was absolutely brilliant. I just feel as though they didn't give them a single sniff. The midfield, you know, the axis of Xhaka and Andrić was absolutely brilliant. Pavlovic looked lost at times, to be honest. It was obviously his biggest start by a long way. That was one of the gambles that Thomas Tuchel made, not to go with Joshua Kimmich, obviously, in this game. He didn't look a happy boy coming off the bench in that second half at all, did he? Yeah, but I mean, he didn't really work out for him. But I mean, it was more to do with the Bayern or fear quality for me, rather than Bayern being. I mean, of course they were poor. Bayern were poor. Let's not forget that. Yeah, but Leverkusen were just brilliant, basically, and they are a brilliant team. That midfield, you know, you're starting to wonder whether Palacios will even get back into that side with the way Andrić's playing at the minute, to be honest. And it just seems as though everything that they do, every change they make in the personnel is working out for them at the minute. And even though they don't have a striker scoring the goals, you know, three goals from fullbacks, it's just, it's magnificent stuff, you know. Flo Wirtz probably didn't have his absolute best game, but for me, the real standout performance, it was, you know, Grimaldo, who just is the gift that keeps on giving, isn't he? Like, he is a probably a world-class player nowadays, you have to say that much. And obviously, Xhaka, Andrić were the standouts for me. I mean, what can you say, Peter? I mean, was there any stage watching this game where you thought Bayern could potentially get back into it?
Not in the slightest. I mean, this was an absolute dominant performance. I think we just witnessed the changing of the guard. And as you alluded to at the beginning, this all began with the team sheets. You could see that Tuchel was attempting to mirror Xabi's ordinary 3-4-3 in the league. And Xabi, as Andrić himself revealed in a post-match interview, had come up with this 4-2-3-1, this unique 4-2-3-1, just on Thursday, and had told the team about it, had drilled them just for one day in there. And he said, we're going to surprise Bayern. We're going to catch him with their pants down. So the fact that Tuchel is attempting to mirror Xabi and Xabi outwits him is just an absolute, I mean, this is a monster story. You couldn't have written a better story than this. And I mean, this was a command performance by everyone in a Leverkusen shirt. Absolutely. Even Frimpong off of the bench hitting the post twice before he is shot into the empty net. I think I've seen enough of Neuer working the outfield for a lifetime. I don't think that ever needs to happen again, not even on a second display. Yes, I mean, this is, you don't want to say that the season is over, of course. I mean, a player of Sacha Boey's quality has to improve after such a terrible match. Let's not forget that Harry Kane is still on pace to break Robert Lewandowski's goal-scoring record and things of this nature. There's plenty of quality in the Bayern squad, but How can they recover from a humiliation like this? And this was an absolute humiliation. Nothing good to say about their performance at all. The Mazraoui shot was the only thing, as Rory mentioned, that could be added to the highlight reel. It is a new dawn. It is the twilight of the Bayern era, as the kicker put it, using a nice Wagnerian term, the Dämmerung, for you. I know Mark's a Wagner enthusiast, so I've gone to Bayreuth and enjoyed that. But it is the case that I see we have a question in there about being positive about Leverkusen. As I said, we didn't know whether or not we had time to do kiosk. The Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung here calls them wie aus einem Guss. It is as if they are chiseled from a monolith. A perfect performance. Bayer Leverkusen beeindruckt gegen die Bayern mit Harmonie, Leidenschaft und Leichtfüßigkeit. So with harmony, passion, and a fleet-footedness. So einen Gegner hatten die Münchner nicht mehr seit Borussia Dortmund 2012. So an opponent, such an opponent Bayern has not had since Borussia Dortmund in 2012. No doubt. Absolutely no doubt.
Yeah, it kind of felt, from a Bayern perspective, you know, square pegs in round holes with the fullbacks. Just didn't work, did it? Mazraoui goes and missed for the second goal on a very nicely worked 1-2 with Grimaldo and Teller, but it wasn't exactly the most, like, tactical masterclass piece of play. It was just a give and go, and Mazraoui and I forget who the other the centre half comes out too far and just gives the space completely. As John's alluded to in the comments, Teller was absolutely excellent. And when we talk about players coming in, the players that have come into the Leverkusen side, and again timely because we had Alex on the show a few weeks ago and we were kind of talking about this. He said they've just done their job just because they know what they're doing and they know what their role is. They know if they perform, they'll be given another chance, and they know the levels that they have to reach to have replaced those who have been away as well. So overall, it's been it was an absolute joy to watch, obviously, if you're a Leverkusen fan. I mean, from a Bayern point of view then, as you say, this kind of feels like a changing of the guard. But obviously, one thing we have to be careful with is writing off Bayern. one thing that I think is maybe different this time around is the fact that it's maybe not in their hands in a sense. So obviously there is the points gap and there's no games in hand, or, you know, it kind of feels a lot more pulled out away from them. Usually when there have been maybe leads by other teams, it's always been, or will, if Bayern win their matches in hand, or if they do this or they do that, then they'll still be champions. Leverkusen have now got those games out of the way, and it is all for them. So maybe we'll have a little look at the run-in in a second, and just have a little think about where each team might trip over still. But in terms of, you know, man of the match of this game, hard to pick one out really, but I mean, just the entire Leverkusen team were absolutely fantastic, weren't they? It's probably hard to pick out just one individual. So, lads, any closing thoughts on just the 90 minutes that we saw on Saturday? I mean, just to kind of summarise it in a few words, Mark, I mean, just give us hell.
Yeah, to be honest, I do want to focus more on the Leverkusen performance. Yeah, it was definitely one of the most dominant. I can't remember, since I've been following the Bundesliga, Bayern Munich losing that heavily before. Just being given a 90-minute runaround like that, where they only created 0.29 was the official XG from the game, from Bayern Munich, in a game of this magnitude, with Harry Kane on the pitch, with Musiala on the pitch, with Leroy Sané on the pitch, 0.29 is all they could muster in the XG. I mean, I think more than anything, that tells you just the level that Leverkusen played at. They didn't give them a sniff. It was just a demolition, basically. And one thing I will say is, if Bayern, Nullfield, Leverkusen don't win the Bundesliga this year, it's a travesty in my eyes. Because I think this is probably the best side we've covered since, you know, we've been doing this show, Rory. And I agree that it's, you know, I don't remember any Bayern team being that good as this Leverkusen side. I mean, they're on course. Potentially, we could even see the unbeaten season. That's another thing we need to talk about at some stage. But let's not get too excited yet. They've got to win the league first. But yeah, this team, I've doubted them at stages, I'll be honest. There were times, you know, after the, you know, that Gladbach draw, you're thinking, is this going to be the end now? You know, but they've gone from strength to strength. And this last week has been the best week of their season, really. The win over Stuttgart and this win. So let's hope they can keep this going and, you know, deliver the silverware that they deserve for Leverkusen and for Xabi as well, of course.
Yeah, it was interesting to see Bayern, as per usual, throw out poor old Thomas Müller to do the post-match pressers as well. He was not a happy individual. And, well, it goes to show that he still cares, you know, very, very deeply. But, yeah, he was most annoyed. You saw Leroy Sané getting very, very frustrated towards the end as well. I think he gave the in-goal camera a good old smack after Frimpong had put the ball into the back of the net. Well, we know the answer to it, but playing devil's advocate here, is Thomas Tuchel's job safe for now?
If they get eliminated from the Champions League, he'll be fired. I see Balam asked about Mourinho. That is actually a real rumor. It was reported in the Sportbild earlier today, who claims that Jose Mourinho is learning German. But the Sportbild is also leading with some Saxon princess who's posing nude for Playboy. So I don't really care what the Sportbild says. I think that Tuchel's, I mean, you say you don't want to get ahead of yourself. Let's talk a few things. First and foremost, that XG stat that Mark quoted, that is the lowest Bayern XG since XG stats have been kept. This is also the first time in 12 years that Bayern have lost a first versus second place game in the Bundesliga. This is such a thorough demolition that and Thomas Müller, as you mentioned, with his Wutrede, you know, Radio Müller, he always does these fabulous post-match interviews and things like that. You know, here, oftentimes he's funny. This time he's just mad. He's mad about being left out, as is Kimmich. You know, the Bayern seem to have a little something going for them with Pavlovic because, you know, they were undefeated with him on the pitch. But that's not going now anymore. What we saw from Bayern during the first goal in particular, no one was paying attention to that throw-in. Yeah. Robert Andrich had all the time and place in the world. They switched off and totally went to sleep. Bacha was ball-watching the entire time. You know, in this, and he's supposedly their big acquisition. The player of the match, to answer your question for me, has to be Stanisic, the Bayern loanee. And now let's get into. I just had the schedule pulled up. I see Joe is one of our viewers is a little bit ahead of me. So Leverkusen have Heidenheim, Mainz, Köln, Wolfsburg, Freiburg, and Hoffenheim up next in the league. There's going to be an Europa League fixture sandwiched in at some point after the KO round, so that may complicate matters. But I don't see how any of those teams could potentially even come close to testing them. So, I mean, they could continue to go on a winning run here. And as Mark and I were talking about yesterday, this cliche of the Bayern response, it's running out of steam. How many Bayern responses are we going to get now? We've had these league losses. We've had this Pokal humiliation. You know, this, oh, we want to show a reaction. We want to show a reaction. We want to show a reaction. Eventually, they're not going to be able to show a reaction. And, you know, to me, watching that Pokal match, it was clear that Leverkusen were going to win this. I tipped them to win this in my column. I'm definitely tipping Leverkusen to take the title now. And I'm probably tipping Tuchel to get sacked at the latest at the end of the season. He will probably go down in Bayern history as one of the biggest, what Germans call Missverständnisse, misunderstandings in Bayern coaching history, really. Might even be the twilight of his career, as a matter of fact, because, I mean, he cannot seem to build consistent success anyway. I really do think that, they have options. They could bring back Flick. They could install Müller as a player a manager. You know, such a thing is not unprecedented in German football. It just seems right at this point that Tuchel is under so much pressure and is making so many tactical mistakes and is mismanaging these egos, which is not an easy task by any stretch of the imagination when you're managing these high profile players. But I mean, the dressing room is in behind him. He's throwing ideas out there to see if they're going to stick. He's looking like a fool in most of his post-match interviews saying, well, we trained well, everybody played hard. I mean, he's, you know, I think he's actually a loss against Lazio tomorrow could even do it. That could do it. You could see him sacked after that or on Wednesday.
Yeah, time will tell. So, yeah, as John's put very kindly, the running for Leverkusen. Mark, do you see any trip-ups along the way? Obviously, you know, highlighted is Dortmund away, obviously you were strong at home, and Stuttgart at home. If, fingers crossed, Stuttgart are still playing great football, that, of course, will be a tricky one. What else have we got? Away. Yeah, I mean, I'm struggling to pick out anything dramatic. So do you see them drop in? They'll drop some point, surely.
Yeah, I mean, they're not going to be completely flawless. But I would say, if you look at the next fixtures, as Peter said, Heidenheim, Mainz, Köln, Wolfsburg, Freiburg, Hoffenheim, Union Berlin, Werder Bremen, before they play Borussia Dortmund away on the 20th of April. I think if they win all of those games, they'll have the title won by then, pretty much. Maybe not mathematically, but realistically, I agree with Peter. I don't think we're going to see that kind of fight back from this Bayern Munich team this year. I think, you know, they could even draw against Bochum this Sunday, to be honest with you. I think it's not beyond the realms of possibility. As you say, they've got this horrible-looking fixture in Lazio, you know, tomorrow, is it now? I mean, that is hard to see them winning that, in truth, at the moment. And as you say, maybe we will see the end of Tuchel. Maybe that won't be a bad thing if we see the end of him, actually, in terms of their, you know, title possibilities. But After seeing that, after seeing what they've done the last week, it's hard to see them dropping points. I mean, Heidenheim away is going to be hard. Yeah, it's not going to be an easy game. They're on a 7-game, actually an 8-game unbeaten run. But yeah, I mean, this Leverkusen side, you just can't see them not winning this game, in truth, you know. And at the end of the day, they're head and shoulders above a team like Heidenheim. And you just can't, as good as Heidenheim are and as good as they've been this season, you can't really see them matching them over a 90-minute game. And aside from that, I mean, the likes of Mainz, Köln, Wolfsburg, no chance. I don't see those teams even getting within 2 goals of this Leverkusen side, in truth. So, yeah, I mean, I think the next 7-8 games, they could have it won, basically, before the kind of main running, when they've got some harder fixtures as well. So that's got to be the goal now for them and Xabi, just beat these kind of middle-of-the-road-slash-bottom teams. And they basically got it in the bag for me, because I don't see Bayern Munich going to win like 8-9 games in a row this season. That's not going to happen for me this year. And I think if a gap of more than, say, 7-8 points opens up, it's game over for this title race. I don't see a blow-up. I don't see any kind of major problems along the way. Maybe we will be talking about the unbeaten season. You know what I mean? I mean, how amazing would that be as well? Yeah, you know, Pokal, Bundesliga, and unbeaten season as well. I mean, that would be some way to go out potentially for Xabi, wouldn't it?
It sure would. Yeah, great stuff. Amazing game. Obviously, an amazing performance by Leverkusen. And yeah, we look forward to seeing how the title race now progresses after that huge hammer blow. So we'll move on then, chaps. As obviously, we spent a good amount of time on that game and the title race. Let's now move on and have a little chat about the fan protests that have been obviously ongoing this weekend and, you know, for a good few weeks and months now. Obviously, in response to the news that obviously the DFB had agreed to this deal to receive new investment new investors into the league. Which is obviously supposed to drive up, I think, what was it, estimates of around $1 billion in revenue or something along those lines. But, of course, what the fans aren't happy about, chaps, is obviously the potential for investors to have a bigger say in the league and potentially what the clubs will do as well. So over the weekend, in both the Bundesliga and the Zweite Bundesliga, we saw even greater levels of disruption in matches, mostly via the form of tennis balls and chocolate coins and the bouncy rubber balls and all sorts. So let's just kind of mull over why the fans are doing this first, and we can kind of grow into it as we go along. So Peter, you'll have a really good knowledge and kind of understanding of this, so I'll throw this your way and maybe you can kind of spell it out for us a little bit more and for obviously those who are more of a casual Bundesliga following, which a lot of our fans are and viewers are, you can kind of maybe spell it out for them in a matter of speaking.
Absolutely. Well, it's important to note it's the DFL who agreed to this licensing deal. The DFL is responsible for administering Germany's top 2 footballing flights and the 36 clubs that contest the top 2 divisions. Now, this DFL licensing deal was the brainchild of Borussia Dortmund boss Hans-Aki Watzke. Hans-Joachim Watzke, we call him Aki. Now, there was an initial vote on this that failed to reach the 2/3 majority last April. I believe we discussed it on the pod at that time. So what Watzke did, along with Axel Hellmann, who is a functionary for Eintracht Frankfurt, is they revised the deal and they tried to address some of the concerns that the clubs had. Guardrails are supposedly built into this investor deal to make sure that the investors do not have influence on league decisions. That's been said. However, what the fans are truly protesting about is that the vote was done by secret ballot. Now, you need a 2/3 majority to get this going, and it was hit right on the money. 24 of the 36 clubs contesting the 2 top German footballing flights voted for this. And it was done by secret ballot. And what Mark and I documented in some of our recent blogs were these atmosphere boycotts, which are very, very common German protests. You know, for the first 15 minutes, the ultra sections remain quiet, and then they end the boycott together by saying Scheiß AfL. Now, when that didn't work, and the chocolate coins have been thrown on the pitch since December. But what's new are two things this weekend. Number one are the tennis balls, and number two is the Fadenkreuz, the crosshairs. You may recall the anti-Dietmar Hopp protests 2019-20, in which Dietmar Hopp was put in the crosshairs. This was right before global lockdown and the pandemic. Martin Kind, Hannover 96 president, who has been trying to overturn 50+1, to give himself an exception to 50+1, just like Dietmar Hopp got. He filed a legal case several years ago, and this went all the way to the Bundesverfassungsgericht, the Supreme Court, right here in Karlsruhe, just down the street from me. And he was defeated. But Martin Kind is one of the most hated figures in German football. So the Hannover fans put him in the Fadenkreuz, in addition to disrupting this this match with tennis balls. And the specific grievance that the German fans want is they want a transparent, they want a revote. And they want to know if Martin Kind was the deciding vote. Because if Martin Kind was the deciding vote for this, there's some legality issues. The fans, the ultra groups, fan societies can potentially take the DFL to court for this. So they either want a transparent revote, or they want to know just schlicht und ergreifend, they want to know plain and simple whether Martin Kind was the deciding vote. Now, what is going to happen with these protests? Are they going to escalate? Are they going to continue? Absolutely, they will. And I can tell you, as a spectator in the stadium, it is, you know, even though I'm you know, a proud 50+1 proponent, a German football fan, it's tough, you know, because you're sitting there like 35 minute delays, you know. Yeah. This is not sustainable for the league. The league is on fire. So some sort of solution has to be come to here. Some sort of compromise has to be reached, because these protests are not going to go away. The reason that they resorted to tennis balls, this actually started last weekend with the Union Berlin ultras, is because unlike the chocolate coins that you can just pick up, or the little rubber balls that, you know, things were, the tennis balls, the Union Berlin ultras, what is the name of that apparatus that, like, actually, Mark, you're a tennis player, you can help me out here. What, when you train on the tennis court, what's the name of that machine that shoots the balls at you?
Well, what is it? I think that's one more for Rory. I know what you mean. Let's call it the shooter. Yeah.
The tennis court shooter. Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
So they're like in the stands there with one of these shooters shooting tennis balls onto the pitch and doing it in a sustained fashion so that the matches were interrupted for 30, 45 minutes. The league is going to try to get some of these matches abandoned, but the protests are not going to go away. So basically, and I want to talk about, I want to emphasize before I turn it over to you guys, because you guys as spectators, you know, I want to get your views on this as well, because you obviously don't want to watch games that are delayed for 45 minutes. You know, nobody wants to sit in a stadium for games that are delayed 45 minutes. But the fact is that the ultra groups and the protest scenes on the Bundesliga beat, you know, the ultra groups are not dumb. You know, and they don't like being treated like they're dumb. Mm-hmm. They invest a lot of time crafting their protest banners every week, the same way that English football fans invest a lot of time, you know, with their chants. You spend the whole week working on chants. You know, if you're going to an away game, you spend the whole bus ride figuring out what your chants are going to be and things like that. The ultra groups are working on these banners all week long, just like carnival, you know, people work on their floats, their costumes. So, I mean, it's... this is an issue that's not going to go away. The only thing that stopped it, the last time it was this bad, was with the Dietmar Hopp protests, which went away because there was a global pandemic and a lockdown. Yeah. I don't know where the solution comes here from. I mean, they're at an impasse unless the fans do get some sort of treatment from the DFL, or get something, some sort of statement from the DFL that says, okay, we're going to give you transparency. And we're going to tell you if Martin Kind was the deciding vote.
But how likely are we to get transparency from the DFL? Do we think, depending on the fact that these protests aren't going to go away, as you've already said. They're probably going to get worse, depending on the creativity of the ultras, and they obviously want to know what is happening. Obviously, it's impacting on the games, it's impacting on the experience of the viewer. So, as you say, the league is, as you say, on fire. But whilst it's got all these other great stories going on, they need to put it out so they can concentrate on all the good that is happening this season. So, what's the likelihood of the DFL coming out and showing some, well, or even having some sort of public statement soon?
Well, Axel Hellmann has said today that they can't have a revote. But the Dirk Zingler, the president of Union Berlin, and also Kai Bernstein's interim successor at Hertha have both said, and they don't even, we don't even know if they voted for this initiative or not. They just said, let's simply tell the public who voted and who didn't. And if that's the case, then these protests will continue, but they will be done in a manageable fashion. Because, I mean, for example, I mean, when I was at Lautern this weekend, on the Betze, the protests were, they took about 5 minutes off of the start, the restart of the second half. Okay. I mean, the Paderborn ultras threw some tennis balls on the pitch. The Lautern ultras did the chocolate coins. It was cleaned up and it was over and it was done. Okay. 5 minutes that's sustainable. The compromise that the ultras are willing to make is that they'll say, okay, we'll make these 5 minute protests, but the Union ultras especially are saying, not going to compromise unless you give us this transparency, and we're going to keep shooting tennis balls onto the pitch with a cannon until you say that. But I mean, I think, look, let's get your views on this, because as a fan, I also agree that these great stories in the Bundesliga are being overshadowed by this, and it's impacting the viewing experience. I mean, as Bundesliga enthusiasts, what are your views on how, I mean, this is eclipsing some of, you know, one of the greatest seasons in Bundesliga history. So, I mean, I've talked enough. Let's get your views on that then.
Mark, a question I have for you around this is this now adding, well, it is a new dynamic to matches that we're viewing in terms of what the players are going through, because we're now basically playing in thirds in a sense. With all the extra added on time, there's a concentration element in it. There's a physical element to it. I think when Terzic was asked about it, he was completely fed up with the question. What do you think it maybe adds, or, you know, adds as a problem in these matches for players particularly?
Yeah, I think you can see from some of the players' reactions that they're not happy at times. I think early on when this started, probably the back end of December, obviously the vote was on the 13th of December. And basically ever since then, we've had protests. Like when I was at the Nuremberg-Hamburg game, there were also protests. But one thing I've noticed is that as time's gone on, the protests have become more and more severe. That's the first point. The delays have become longer, and also the kind of, in my opinion, the mentality both on the part of the players and also some of the casual viewers as well has changed a lot, because I actually watched the Stuttgart versus Mainz game on Sunday, and you could see a lot of the fans were streaming out of the stadium after they looked furious about their own ultras for doing this. But I think this is, in my opinion, is very much an ultra-backed scheme. It is the ultras groups that are throwing most of these tennis balls and things like that on the pitch. And I think it's also affecting the product as well of the Bundesliga. But on the other side, I can also see it from the fans' perspective as well, because I, obviously, being here, I've been to many, many games in Germany. I know the ultras culture, and German football would be a lot worse without the ultras culture, let's say that much. You know, the ultras give so much to they're a fantastic, they create the atmosphere, they lead the chants, and that's something that everyone in the world has got to experience at least once in their life, to see these German ultras. There's nothing better. It literally makes the hairs on the back of your neck stand on end, you know what I mean? It's absolutely brilliant. But at the same time, they are very political in Germany as well. The ultras groups are extremely political, and even before this, it was very, very often that they, they hold up banners protesting against club decisions or against DFL decisions. I remember being at a Nuremberg game once, and it was on a Monday night, And the Nuremberg fans were throwing on black tennis balls and saying Schwarz Montag, which was obviously like Black Monday, basically. And they were furious about the fact the game was on a Monday against Borussia Dortmund, and they were protesting against that as well. So protests are nothing new in German football, definitely. And I think, but obviously to this level, it's been a long time since we saw this level of protests. And yeah, I agree with you guys that something's got to be done because it's affecting the Bundesliga as a product. And also, even for me, when I'm watching games on TV, I'm like, not again. You know what I mean? It's like, it is getting a little bit. But I can see the ultras' frustration. And this is a big deal, by the way. This is a big deal because there's so many supporters, and especially ultras supporters, they believe this could be the beginning of the end for the 50+1. And 50+1 is German football, basically. It's as simple as that. It's non-negotiable that 50+1 has to stay. And I think everyone who loves the Bundesliga agrees with that because 50+1 is so much to do with the Bundesliga, and it goes so deep into the culture of Germany and German football culture, and it has to stay. But at the same time, something has to change, yeah, in terms of the protest, because this is not good, and it is getting worse every week. You know, the fans feel as though they're being ignored and they're not happy, and I think it could get worse, really. Things could get really severe if things continue and there's no transparency on this issue. As you mentioned, Martin Kind is just basically hated here in Germany, and he seems to be the main one at the moment that is kind of in the crosshairs, as you say, you know. So things are ugly. I mean, it's going to be interesting when myself and Peter attend Nuremberg Kaiserslautern, because two traditional clubs, very, very strong ultras groups as well, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens as well.
Yeah. Absolutely. And just picking up a couple of comments on that as well. Charles has said, I can't watch the whole games anymore. I just don't have the time. Other than that, I'm not annoyed. And as you say, you know, watching a football match is a, you know, is a time commitment. It's a 90-minute match, obviously, with adverts and half time. It's 2 hours. But with these protests, you're looking at 2.5-3 hours a game. And, you know, obviously, from Sunday's point of view, I was watching the Stuttgart game first, followed by my English team United. But I had to switch off the Stuttgart game, put it on my phone because it overran. So it's just, yeah, it's really interesting. You know, there's a clear reason why it's being done. John has also offered a comment saying the DFL plans include things like infrastructure, digitalization, internationalization, media platforms, etc., but nothing about fan culture, which is one of the best things about the league. Absolutely spot on as well there, John, which is, you know, really good point. Sorry, go on, Peter.
Well, essentially, I mean, the Watzke says, and indeed, the three investors that were interested, that were bidding for this one, the European capital firm, the Swedish capital firm, and Blackstone, the American firm, which is most likely to get it. The Swedish firm was reportedly thrown out of negotiations because they were afraid that they would want to have too much influence on league decisions. So look, Watzke and Hellmann and other proponents of this, including Zingler, who was a proponent of this himself, they insist that 50+1 is protected within this deal. The fact that the vote was done on secret ballot, and the fact that the negotiations with the capital firm, DFL negotiations with these capital firms, are not public either, that's what the fans are protesting against. Not necessarily that you know, their league is going to be bought or ruined or something like that. What they're protesting against is they believe that this is sort of a Trojan horse by which investors will have some influence on league decisions, things like kickoff times, you know, which are already going in sort of the wrong direction. You know, Germans are not happy about the staggered kickoff times. Yeah. They're not happy. And okay, so that's what they're protesting about. It's a complicated issue. We might move on a little bit and talk about some of the other action in the league as well.
Yeah, exactly. But no, it was, you know, really interesting. We needed to give it its time because it is a big thing right now. But yeah, no, it's good to have talked that through and to have got an understanding from all different ends, and some great comments on that as well. Right then, next bit of breaking news to run through is the fact that Mainz have dismissed Jan Seward today. They've let go Bo Svensson's replacement after a short spell with the club. 41-year-old was not able to turn things around for the 05ers. The 3-1 loss on Sunday to Stuttgart was obviously the last straw, so to speak. I mean, Seward hadn't done a terrible job, to be honest, but I had thought, chaps, but the Mainz just can't score goals. And, you know, when it gets to the fact of you try and coach and coach and coach team, if a team isn't going to put the ball in the back of the net, you are not going to win matches of football, no matter how, you know, pleasing it might be, you know, in terms of their performances and how they might deserve stuff. We've kind of looked at the XG table and where mine should be. But unfortunately, you know, it's not done on XG. It's done on points and goals being scored and everything else in between. Obviously, they hadn't won for a long time either, so the pressure was naturally building in that sense. So, Mark, I'll just come to you straight away on this one. Are you surprised? Is it just a case of a bit of a gamble at this stage and just seeing can they get another player bounce or something like that with a new head coach?
Yeah, I mean, as you say, Mainz can't score goals and Jan Seever can't win football matches as a manager, basically. It's as simple as that. Like, we talked before about his record at Huddersfield Town, winning only one out of his 19 games. And, I mean, he only won one out of his 12 as well at Mainz. So it's not exactly stellar numbers, is it, at all? And ironically, his only win was against RB Leipzig in his first game, that 2-0 win. So, yeah, I mean, they've not scored more than one goal since that game as well. They've only scored more than one goal in a match against Leipzig. And since then, they've either had one or zero goals since then. So I think that says everything. I wouldn't, as you mentioned, Rory, I wouldn't say it was drastically bad, the football that they were playing. They had a lot of bad luck in there, I would say. A lot of terrible finishing as well. I've never known a team miss as many chances of Mainz 05 this season, really. But they have had a lot of bad luck. You know, obviously last week of the game that Peter went to, it looked as though they had a penalty through a Jork and it turned out to be offside. That was a little bit unlucky as well. But yeah, they need someone better, really. I mean, I think it was a mistake to appoint him in the first place, in truth, because now, I mean, you know, you've got 13 games less in the season. You're bottom two. You've not won in 11 games. I mean, who are you going to get in, realistically? You know what I mean? I mean, only desperate people are going to want to go in and take that job right now, because let's be honest, they're likely to have a relegation on the CV, which is not going to be good for their career and whatever. So I can only imagine another youth coach is potentially going to be linked. I mean, Peter, I don't know if you've heard of anyone linked, but obviously it's very early days in that. But for me, I can imagine them going for another youth coach or kind of really left field appointment, really.
We'll find out tomorrow. The new trainer will be appointed tomorrow. As a matter of fact, I have no idea who it's going to be. I've not heard any rumors in the pipelines there. You mentioned I have a vlog released, Mainz Union, which shows that Mainz had some really excellent opportunities to score in the opening minutes of that Union fixture. Actually had some good opportunities in the Stuttgart fixture as well. Mm-hmm. But Jan Seward is cursed, whether he's in the Pfalz or he's in Huddersfield Town. He won the one game the first game that he took over from Bo Svensson, and then he has not won since. You have to look at his tactics. His tactics have been all over the map. They've been very poor, particularly the desperate idea of just like moving that Johnny Sebo striking access back behind Jessica Ngoncom and having Nadia Mamiri play 10 in the first match. Now, when I went to Mainz, there was, I got into an interesting conversation with Strassmann with some 12-year-olds who were really, really excited about the Mainz U19s who got into the round of 16 of the Champions League.
Yeah.
And there's been some rumors that Benny Hoffman, who's not to be confused with the journalist of the same name who works for Kicker, who manages that team, is going to be installed. But I don't see how that works. How on earth can you install another? I mean, because Sievert was an assistant. And how do you install another assistant? How do you just promote another assistant into the program when it's a massive relegation fight? So I have no idea who it's going to be. Klopp back to Mainz next season would be nice, but I'm really hoping that he's in charge of the German national team after the Euros, if a man can dream. But yeah, I really have no idea who this appointment is going to be. I mean, Christian Heidel and Martin Schmidt are very, very good administrators, and some of the injuries at Mainz are clearing up. So I imagine they've had a target in mind for some time, and they're probably going to unveil somebody quite recognizable. So stay tuned for that. It should be interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Quickly then, get your thoughts in a sentence. Regardless of who Mainz now get in the door, are they doomed to be relegated or not? Mark, yes or no?
Yes, no. Yeah, I think in Germany you say, what is it? The word Jein, do they say as well for Ja, Nein? Yeah, I think like the mixture between yes and no. Yeah, I think it's no. I'm going to say no. I think it's not all over yet. I think they can still stay up, but they've got to, yeah, they need a. I think it all depends on the appointment. So I'm going to say Jein for this one.
Yeah, on the fence. Yeah, right, Peter, yeah. Are you on the fence or not?
Some of the injuries are clearing. I mentioned Henke Olsen is back. Viper and Gruda are also coming back. Mm-hmm. So there's that to keep in mind. That could help them a great deal. That's the only thing that could help them. These guys better be back and fit and ready to go.
They need to be fit and firing, and they need to score goals. But yeah, Viper is a player I like. Yeah, absolutely. And they had their moments against Stuttgart at the weekend, that's for sure. Right then, we've got about 10 minutes, and we'll try and clear up the rest of the games from the weekend because there was lots of great action. Let's start with Friday night quickly. Dortmund still doing what they need to do. Donny Marlon brace, assisted by his striking partner, Niklas Füllkrug, who also got himself on the end of a delicious crossing by Mattsson towards the end of the game to finish off a rather blunt Freiburg side. This one was, I think, as predicted, chaps. Dortmund doing the business at home. Probably played the best that they've played since the break, I would say. I thought they were quite good. Mattsson was good. Having Julian Ryerson back at right back, I thought he was really impressive at times. Mattsson obviously has done well and come in. I don't know why a lot of people don't like or rate Donny Marlon. I know his form is patchy, but I think there is a real quality player in there. And Füllkrug seems to be settling a lot more as well. Obviously got Haller to come back into the team as well. So maybe starting to look a little bit better for Dortmund, but I don't think we'll rest on that too much. Obviously, from the top four point of view, obviously Sunday, VfB Stuttgart did the business against Mainz, as we've already alluded to. Some good performances in there. Again, Maxi Mittelstädt got on the score sheet with Undav doing the business and the return of Girassi, who got a great hero's welcome by the Kamstadter Kurve as well. Good, solid performance. So the biggest losers from the weekend, chaps, were RB Leipzig, who were involved in a very entertaining 2-2 draw with FC Augsburg, who are a team that just are never beaten. But they'll obviously be kicking themselves, the fact that they missed a late penalty. Pretty tame one from Openda, who had already scored a really, really good, nice header. Mark, yeah, bad weekend and, well, a bad 2024 so far from Leipzig.
Yeah, I think, again, it's goalkeeping issues has done them. Obviously, Blasvik was actually dropped, and then obviously Gulatzi made his first start in a long, long time. I think we're talking 18 months the last time he started a Bundesliga game. But he ended up dropping a bit of a clanger for the Teats goal, didn't he? Like, that shot from miles away was poorly parried out. I think, yeah, and they don't take the chances, do they? That's the other issue. Like, Openda is one of the hardest players to analyse his performance this season because he's actually got 15 goals in the Bundesliga this year. Not many people have talked about him, but I bet he's missed another 15 easy chances as well on top of that this season. So it's kind of hard to analyse where he's at. I mean, he does get goals, you know, he's always there and thereabouts, but he's not like a prime Werner or... you know what I mean? He's not quite at that level yet. But, yeah, I mean, what can you say about Leipzig? I mean, obviously, for you, Rory, it was a great weekend, wasn't it? Obviously, Stuttgart going 6 points clear now of RB Leipzig. Wow, I mean, with good fixtures to come as well. So, I mean, things are looking good for Stuttgart. For Leipzig, I mean, Peter, maybe you know this. When was the last time they didn't qualify for the Champions League? Because I think since they got into the Bundesliga, they either qualify for it every season or maybe one, they missed it. But it's been definitely a while since they didn't qualify for it.
You got me there, Mark. I don't know. I don't. Yeah. I mean, that's Germans obviously irritated by the fact that they did get into the first league almost immediately and qualify. But I you got me on that one. I think they have always qualified. That much is true. But how about your Fuggerstedt?
Yeah, the Fuggerstedt, I'm chuffed with them, really. Yeah, I mean, Demirovic, what can you say about Demirovic, really? I mean, the guy, 12 goals this season, 20. I think, Peter, you told me he's got 20 million euro market worth now on a transfer market. So that's insane, really, from a man who came in for a bratwurst and a packet of crisps a couple of years ago, basically, you know. Like, his career looked finished after that failed spell at Freiburg, but... my God, is he playing well? You know, and that front partnership works well with Teats. And it's just a pity about Jakic, really, isn't it, there? But aside from that, the Fuggerstedt are doing fine. And, you know, I think they'll stay up quite comfortably this year, in my opinion.
Yeah, and so two draws for our bottom side at the moment. Where am I? Köln, obviously, were denied late on. By Hoffenheim, who simply cannot win at home. So I think I predicted a draw in that one. And obviously Darmstadt held Gladbach to a 0-0 draw as well. Regrettably for both sides, it wasn't even that good a weekend because of the Union Berlin win as well. Obviously, Danilo Dueki scoring the only goal of the match, a great powerful header in what was, I think, the 70th minute of the first half, thanks to the protests, obviously, which were going on, which we've already alluded to. But I mean, again, it's something that we quite happily predicted that Wolfsburg just would, well, didn't roll over because it was only 1-0, but they didn't look entirely likely to score. So that was a fairly predictable scoreline. And just to maybe to finish off, it'd be poor of us to miss out Heidenheim's fantastic win on the road once more to see off. Both teams, I guess, are one of the few informed teams in the league, really. So Heidenheim ending Werder's 7-game unbeaten run. So Heidenheim have now gone 8 games unbeaten. What an effort, chaps, from Heidenheim. They are just storming this league. They're not far away from European football, and the way that the teams are going above them, but you know, they've almost caught the Union Berlin magic, and they're running with it because some of the players are performing so at such a high level right now. Scoring some really good goals. You know, we're a huge fan of Bester. On the show, but you know, the likes of Dinchy, Pieringer, Kleindienst, Maloney obviously coming in and providing some big goals, and they've even shut up shop a lot more at defence as well, which has been a huge improvement. So just a final word from you two maybe on Heidenheim. Peter, what have you made of their little run?
Congratulations to Leonard Maloney, the new U.S. international. He is German, but he plays for the U.S. now. And Jan-Nicolas Besta for the national team. Bastian Schweinsteiger thinks it's a good idea. why not? The only problem is that Tim Kleindienst has finishing has been poor this season. But yeah, they went to Bremen and the 125th birthday celebration. Beautiful stadium wide choreo there at the Weserstadion. It was absolutely gorgeous. And they fearlessly scored two goals inside of 18 minutes. You can't have Europe at the Voigt Arena. That's not. It's like the stadium. Well, it used to be the case with the stadium in the Alte Försterei that it's too small. Yeah. So I don't know where they play their European games. Maybe over at Augsburg.
Maybe in Nuremberg. Who knows? Yeah, that'd be cool. It's not that far from Nuremberg. I don't know. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, from me as well. Well, what a team! Yeah, as you said, they've gone from a team that scored a lot and shipped a lot of goals, but now, as you say, they rolled the luck a little bit in this one. To be fair, after the 2-0, because Bremen missed a lot of chances at 2-1, especially, and Boré hit the post, and then it just seemed like the ball wouldn't go into the proverbial onion bag at all, would it? So, yeah, I mean, it was a great match. This was a proper Bundesliga match, as you say. The atmosphere looked incredible. Like all of the fans wearing those cagoules as well, like the green and white cagoules. That was cool, and there were no protests at that one as well, which was pretty nice to see. So, yeah, but I mean, what an atmosphere! What a game!
How about that?
Yeah. Absolutely. But I guess that's everything for today. So thanks a lot, guys, for joining us. We've had a real good turnout. Thanks for the comments as well. Always good to see. Remember, if you enjoyed what you saw today, check out Over the Bar FB and Over the Bar Extra. Don't forget that we're not only a YouTube channel anymore as well. We are podcast too. So don't forget to leave a rating and follow our podcast too. And don't forget to like, comment and subscribe on our YouTube. I see we've already got a couple of subscribers just from this show as well, which is fantastic to see. So yeah, great turnout today. Obviously a lot of big talking points, but look out for Peter's vlog as well. That should be coming out tomorrow, all things being well. So, yeah, thanks a lot, guys. And we'll see you again on Thursday for the predictions. See you then, guys.